CBS on the World. I'm John Batchelor, and I welcome Josh Rogan of the Washington Post Global Opinion to help me understand a story that has gone on for several years, many years. Syria, the darkness visible of the collapse of the state. However, right now, Josh has published a column in the Washington Post anticipating the conversation between President Putin and President Biden in Geneva, above Lake Geneva. And this quote in Josh's column requires explication. The Secretary of State, Mr. Blinken, Antony Blinken speaking. Unhindered access to Syrians is more important than ever, not only because of the growing humanitarian crisis, but also because of the threat posed by COVID-19. Josh, a very good evening to you. What unhindered access? Where in Syria? What is the Secretary of State speaking of, and why was he addressing this remark to the Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov? Good evening.
Good evening, John. Well, after 10 years of bitter war, the Assad regime controls roughly two-thirds of what was previously known as the country of Syria. In that remaining one-third or so, somewhere between 5 and 6 million people are living. And in the northwest province of Idlib, approximately 3 million people are starving, living under olive trees and begging the international world for international community for relief. And currently that relief is only provided through one border crossing in between Turkey and Syria. And the Russian government is working very hard at the UN to close that very border crossing, which would leave these 3 million people desperate, not able to secure food or medicine in the middle of a pandemic, in the middle of a war. And that's what Secretary Blinken is talking about. That's what the Biden administration is trying to prevent. Now, regardless of how we got to this situation, the truth is that the best hope of continuing the aid and even increasing the aid to these suffering Syrian people who are living outside of Assad's rule because they don't wish to rejoin the Syrian state that they initiated a revolution against in the first place. Probably the only way to solve the problem is by the U.S. and Russia coming to some sort of agreement over reauthorizing these routes, which are administered by the United Nations. And that will be on the agenda of the Biden-Putin meeting in Geneva on Wednesday. So the question, I think, for a lot of Syria watchers is, can this small but important issue be a symbol of a new normal in U.S.-Russia relations, whereby we can still bash each other in the press but actually come together to work on issues of mutual interest? And I think the question is unanswered on both sides. In other words, the Biden administration doesn't know if Vladimir Putin wants to make some sort of deal that can show some sort of progress on this issue called Syria. And the Putin government doesn't know if the Biden people are willing to do what they want them to do. In other words, make reciprocal concessions on Syria in order for them to allow the aid to go through. And, you know, millions of Syrian lives hang in the balance. So a lot of people are watching this Biden-Putin meeting very, very closely.
What is the advantage to Russia to keeping this large group of people trapped? And what is the advantage to Russia if they cut off access? How does Moscow gain?
Right. So the gain is primarily to the Assad regime, which is using hunger and starvation as a weapon of war and has been doing that for all 10 years of the crisis. In other words, they are trying to starve the people of Idlib into submission so that they will voluntarily rejoin the regime. The problem, of course, for those people is that they know what that means. And especially for the men, it means certain detention and torture and death or conscription if they're lucky. And so that's not an option that they're willing to rush into. So for the Russians, they're supporting the Assad regime and they're arguing for the principle of sovereignty in international relations, but there's a perception, at least inside the Biden administration, that perhaps their interests are a little bit different, and actually they're just using this for leverage, and there's lots of other things that Putin wants from Biden, including sanctions relief and the like. Now, if you just think about that for a second, that's a pretty cynical thing to do, to starve 3 million Syrians in order to get some sanctions relief on an unrelated issue. But from what we know about Vladimir Putin, it's totally believable. So that would be some sort of deal, is that if the Biden administration can give Putin something that he wants, then Putin would recognize that actually Russia's interests are not the same as the Assad regime's interests. But, you know, it's kind of grotesque to think about rewarding Vladimir Putin for simply not starving 3 million people. But that's exactly where we are.
You remind me, Josh, beg pardon, of a very famous story from 2,000 years ago when Caesar was making war on the Gauls. Vercingetorix was the leader of the Gallic tribes. And the siege led to Vercingetorix reduced food, surrounded by the Roman army, released all the townspeople who were not warriors. The Romans wouldn't let them out from the ring around the town. And Vercingetorix and Caesar watched all those people starve day after day between them. I bring up that very famous scene from Caesar's Wars because I'm wondering if we're looking at that. Will Moscow and Washington watch these people starve while they stare at each other?
Yeah, I mean, that's one great reference from Roman history. The late Senator John McCain would often refer to when he was talking about Assad's policy, long-held strategy of starvation sieges, he would often refer to speech by Tacitus, and where he said, where he's often quoted as saying, "They make a desert and they call it peace." And this was McCain's favorite way to describe the situation in Syria, which is simply that Assad would rather kill everybody who opposes him and then take over the land that way than make any sort of concession whatsoever. And that is about as clear of a crime against humanity as one could imagine. And the Russians are participating in it. In other words, they're actively helping the Assad regime commit these crimes against humanity. And that's a stain on them, but also on our entire international society. But, you know, that can't be allowed to succeed. And what's going to happen if the Russians insist on cutting off these aid routes in the UN, then the US and Turkey and some other like-minded countries are going to have to find another way to get food and medicine to these starving people. That won't be easy. And, you know, that's something that they're contemplating right now, is to build a different way in, to get these people their aid. But in that process, thousands of people will surely die and millions will surely suffer. So there's some sympathy towards just giving Putin something that he wants if it doesn't look too egregiously like a bribe for not starving people. And, you know, there's also a hope, I would say, inside the Biden administration that if they can come to some agreement on Syria, this could be the basis for further U.S.-Russia cooperation on areas of mutual interest, whether that be Iran or climate change or arms control or what have you. And if they can't get an agreement on this, in other words, if Putin can't even be, seen to be amenable to a deal on not starving 3 million innocent people, well, then the rest of the agenda looks pretty much shot down. The rest of the agenda looks pretty much impossible to achieve, because it's really hard to come together on arms control if you can't even come together on not starving 3 million innocent people.
What will you be looking for in the early hours after the meeting of the two? What will tell you that this conversation has a day two and that there might be a resolution off camera?
Well, I'll be honest with you. What I've been tracking is the teams of people in the State Department that are in Geneva now who have been working for the last few days on all of these different issues. So the Middle East team, the arms control team, representatives of the Iran team, they're working on stuff behind the scenes. So it may not all get announced today, but I think the signal will be, will those teams stay in contact? Will they set up the follow-up meetings? You know, the Biden-Putin meeting is a touchstone, but then after that, all of these various people will have to implement whatever they decide. And so if it's all quiet after the Biden-Putin meeting and there's no follow-ups, there's no, you know, systems in place to put any of this stuff into action, well, then we'll know it was a complete failure and we can just, you know, batten up the hatches. But if there is a some sort of breakthrough, then you'll quickly see some follow-up diplomacy to make it into something real.
1948. Berlin is cut off by the Soviets. The airlift begins. Are they talking airlift? Anything like that? Is the scale outside of our ability to deliver food from the sky?
I think the airlift scenario is not likely. I think we're talking about trucks of aid going through Turkey through a various number of routes and being handed off to a various number of middlemen. And that's, you know, right for corruption and
right.
Mismanagement. Not to say the UN process is much better, by the way, because most of the UN aid goes through the regime, which steals it, you know, and gives it to feed their cronies and their soldiers. So in a way, international aid has been supporting the Assad regime and its military for the last 10 years, but at least some of it, at least a small portion of it, was going to the people who are lucky enough not to live outside of Assad's cruel rule. And now even that is being choked off. And, you know, it's important to mention here that, you know, the reason that these people don't want to live under Assad's rule is because He's in the process of torturing and murdering millions of their fellow citizens in a campaign that is the worst systematic crimes since the Holocaust, according to the State Department's Ambassador for War Crimes, Stephen Rapp. And we have to sort of look at that and say, okay, well, we have an obligation to stand up to those crimes against humanity, but also to find a way to save these people's lives in the near term. And right now we're failing at both. The international community is failing at both. And the reason the Biden administration doesn't apply more attention and senior level influence to this issue is because that team inside the Biden administration is really focused on Iran. And we're facing a similar pattern where the Syria issue is being subjugated to the Iran diplomacy inside the Biden administration. And, you know, even though Tony Blinken seems very engaged on this, and he is actually known to be very engaged on this, we don't see much action on Syria at all. There's no Syria envoy. There's supposed to be a Syria envoy in every administration. They haven't bothered to appoint one. That's a clear indication that the Biden administration is not really placing a high priority on this issue. But that also shows why the Biden-Putin meeting could be so influential, because, you know, when the president of the United States says something, the U.S. government pretty much has to respond.
Josh Rogan, Global Opinion for The Washington Post, CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batch.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.